count.
Thank you, whoever remembered that button. All right, you could go to your Poll Everywhere account and log in. You can go to, so you can, you are very helpful to me. You can also take your phone, and if you have your QR code scanner on it, you can scan the code over on the right hand side, and it will take you directly to that, and you should be able to participate in that. So that's something that your students could do at any time, and they could be at the back of the room, and as long as they can bring up their phone, but also they can always go to the Poll Everywhere account, and you'll notice that I put that Poll Everywhere account in our PollEverywhere.com.lead so that you can participate in it as well. So this is one way to take attendance. Okay. Any questions? Oh, I have some chat people. Well, so I found it. Okay. All right. Sherry, no, I asked for all part-time to be on there, but it could just be that you weren't in the right place when we put you there. So I'm not seeing anybody fill it in. Are we having problems getting to Poll Everywhere? Is that, oh, are we having problems getting to Poll Everywhere? Now, normally I would take my first 2-3 classes. My first whole week is all about getting the app set up and all about getting organized. And all about being, and all about how are we going to do things and setting up those tools. And yes, it's going to take time. Your first 3-4 classes are going to take time, but that means that further on, things are going to move smoothly so that all your students can access those apps, that all your students can have access to any of those things. So one, we've talked about this before in UDL training, is why do we ask questions like, how are you feeling? Well, if I can't meet you at the door, I want to know how you're feeling. And I'm not necessarily seeing all of your faces, okay? And so everybody would participate and move on to choose something. Did anybody give it a try? Did anybody connect to it? I did respond, not sure why it's through. Oh, you did respond. Okay, it could just be that it's not moving fast enough for us. Okay, note. If it works better. The problem is that because I don't have 2 screens. What are you guys seeing right now? Yeah, the problem is I don't have 2 screens. So one of my recommendations to IT is that every station that does hybrid teaching should have 2 screens. That's my big recommendation. Okay. Yeah, so if you did, it'll eventually show up, I guess. So we're just a little behind the times with it right now. Okay. I'll try and reset. Yep, reset.
Jana, could I ask you a quick question?
You absolutely can.
So sorry. I know I'm not part of this PD, so I'm trying to stay away, but it's really hard for me. Mm-hmm. So if faculty do not have a Zoom account, do they have to log in with a certain Zoom URL from Blackboard, or can they just set up their own?
They should log into the Zoom account. They should be able to just use that Zoom invitation that we sent out. If they can't, I can send out another one.
Yeah, it's Jennifer. That was my problem, is I went in and it wasn't letting me log in through Zoom. But then when I went back and tried it again, it worked the second time. And it didn't even require a login the second time. So I don't know if the meeting hadn't been launched and that's what it was waiting for.
Okay.
But I did have that same problem where it wanted me to log in through my Zoom account, but the second time it just went straight in.
So okay.
And I never did log in.
So the host has to activate it using a Northern College authenticated Zoom account. So that could have been what it was waiting for, because I tried to use my Northern College authentication and it wouldn't let me. But then once I logged in as lead, it allowed, and authenticated as lead, it did.
Okay, I'll let them know. I'm just getting some emails, so I'll let them know. Thanks.
Okay. All right. So welcome. As I mentioned, beginning of the semester, I'm going to spend a lot of time setting up and making sure everybody's comfortable with how to use any of the ed tech tools that we would be using, such as Pool Everywhere, Socrative, and Zoom. I am also going to use, and any other ed tech tools I'm going to use, I am also going to make sure that everything I do, everything I want my students to connect with, is available for them in Blackboard. So for example, today's class, I provided everything we're going to do. I provided their agenda. And when I start the class, I'm going to say, hey, if you click on the collaborative notes, any of you can click on the collaborative notes in that Blackboard, you can all make notes on what the class is about. So you have them to go back and refer to. So not just one student taking notes, it's multiple students taking notes, and they're working together to get the best notes they can. Then as we go through the lecture and I say, hey, we're going to do this breakout room, they can click on that and see what it's all about and get into it. And we'll go into that. So once again, I am using the LMS as the launching pad for any interactivities that we're doing. And I have to, like, we're not a very big group. Because we're not a very big group, because I had planned quite a few breakout rooms with some readings and stuff. Because we're not a very big group, I'm going to change that up a bit, but we'll kind of get a feel for how it's going. Okay. All right. Am I still sharing my screen? Oh, things froze here. Okay, going back to share my screen. And you have, and I will be the first one to tell you, you have to be forgiving of yourself as well, right? This is one thing you're gonna have to be forgiving of yourself and be able to kind of go with things as well. All right. So going back. So the first thing I'm going to do is attendance. Now there's many ways you can do attendance. You can do attendance using any software. You can do attendance just by roll call. This is a one thing that I know. Once again, this one's Pool Everywhere. You can scan it in or just scan it in and just click on whoever you are. If you wanted to be somebody, you didn't know who was going to show up. I've seen elementary school teachers use this in an in-person class. When students walk in, they hit their name or they hit their avatar on a smart board just to check in. Also, another neat feature that we have, of course, is that we do have the polls that are actually built into Zoom as well. And so if I wanted to bring any of those up, I could use polling in Zoom to take my attendance and then it would be right there in Zoom. Can we see the last screen in Pool Everywhere? This screen? Or this?
Sorry, I was trying to send you a secret message. And Pool Everywhere, that's what we see.
Okay.
So if you can just advance it to the little aliens.
That one. Oh, advance it to the little aliens. I see. Yes, it should advance automatically. The reason it should advance automatically is because I built this into Good with it? Do you see the little aliens?
Not yet.
Not yet. Okay.
This is in poll everywhere. We don't see the aliens yet.
Okay. So it's an option as well. The other option, of course, is that you can do your polls automatically in Zoom. Setting up your physical space. To set up your physical space, first of all, you need to try and make sure that you're facing your physical students, if there's some in the room, okay? And your camera is looking at your specific space, at you, okay? And that's hard. We tend to, especially the way the podiums are set up, this one's not bad, but I've been in some rooms where the podium's way off to the side and the instructor ends up turning to look at the students. So if you can physically set up your space so that you're looking at your physical students as well as you are looking at your virtual students, that's the best way to go. So if you could set up, now what they did here is they put a camera right on top for me. And it's a little bit tall for me. The camera's a little bit high, so I always feel like I need to go on my tippy toes because the monitor is too high, but it does work for me. So am I kind of looking straight at you? This is when you ask students, because if I go and look over to a monitor, I'm looking over, right? So I'm okay now, or what do you want me to do? And this is something I would set up at the very beginning too, or have somebody else log in and talk to me about.
I can see you, it's Jennifer.
Hi.
I think you are in C122, which is the classroom I teach in.
Mm-hmm.
And so the assistant, so you had them put that camera there for today. That's not mm-hmm. a normal camera, right?
Yes.
Yeah. Because when I teach there and I'm teaching blended,
yes.
then it's a very weird camera angle for the students.
Yeah, it's the one up top, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
So, okay. I will talk to IT about that then. Thanks.
Oh, I have them left it. I they're leaving it in.
Oh, are they? Awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
You're welcome. Okay. So first, okay, going back to, we, you know, as we work through UDL and as we've learned how to become teachers and how we've learned how to be good instructors, and even if we have not had much of that training, okay, even we do instinctively, because we were students, know what a good instructor is, know what a safe learning community is, and know what makes a class engaging. For that reason, I am going to ask you, I'm going to put you in very small breakout rooms. I'm going to ask you to go into your breakout rooms, and you're going to be in very small ones. I'm going to tell you what are the characteristics of a good instructor, what are the characteristics of a safe learning community, and what makes a class engaging. Okay, so I'm just going to throw you into some breakout rooms, and you are going to go through these. You'll notice that in our links, you'll find the breakout room one, and there is a slide for each breakout room depending on which one you're assigned to, 1, 2, or 3. Your job as a group is to discuss and fill this out and be able to present it. Okay, so I'm going to stop sharing for a sec, and I'm going to throw everybody into breakout rooms. And I'll pop in and tell you which one you're in. But if you end up in breakout one, two, or three, you kind of know which one you're in. Okay. Oh, you guys came back.
It knocked me out of the room quickly.
Really? You guys are the only ones who got knocked out of the room. The others are still in there.
No, I think I'm the only one in my room because I'm keeping the notes. And so I think it moved me out.
Yes.
I must have pushed enter. Yeah. We've just got 30 seconds anyway, so.
Yes. Oh, there's some hum somewhere. Coyote, turn off your mute. There. Somebody is coming. Okay. Everybody's back in 2 seconds. Hello and welcome back. All right. So you had some time to think about the questions that we asked. And I am going to And so our first question, our breakout room was, what are some characteristics of a good instructor? So group one, what were some characteristics of a good instructor you would like to share with us? And who is sharing with us?
Are we group one?
Yeah, you were group one.
Okay. All right, then I will share. Okay, so what we did, we actually looked at all the three questions. So the ideas that came out for the first one, a good instructor is someone who cares. It's a good communicator. And another one that came up is approachable. And a good listener. Okay. I don't want to share the other ones because it belongs to other groups.
Okay, thanks, Coyote. So when you think of a good instructor, like I think of elementary school teachers that I had that love, you know, like were there because they listened and they knew they cared for me, or middle school teachers or high school teachers. You know, there's always those instructors you're thinking, wow, they made an impact on my life, or I knew they cared about me. And so characteristic, a good listener. Anybody else want to add to that? So we had good listener, caring. Anybody else? What stands out to you as a good instructor? Do you want to add to the document?
It's Jennifer. I would add... compassionate in there in a way that balances that caring with also kind of almost a parental tough love.
That's a great one.
That you kind of have to find that balance between, I know your life's falling apart, and asking the tough question of, is this a good time for you to be in school? I can only extend, you know, no, you can't have an extension, right?
Yeah. Or what are you doing to manage your life? What, right? Like, where are your priorities?
Sometimes and how can we help that? Right.
How can we help that? That's absolutely right. I see somebody put something in chat. Yeah, it was, oh, Jennifer said, that's a great answer, Jennifer. I think that makes a huge difference. Jason, you have your hand raised.
I would say a characteristic of a good instructor would be someone who can not just understand, but I can't use my words today, who could relate to the students in the audience. We obviously have a large international contingent. And really, I learned this from one of my very special coworkers, Mrs. Burns, Professor Burns, getting into understanding what are our students like, cricket. So joined her my first a few weeks of teaching, went with her, and she rented a projector in the cafeteria to watch a cricket match with the students. So, you know, understanding that and then asking the students, you know, so what's going on here, and playing with them once in a while. So when you can go and speak and you do your instruction, you can bring up stuff, or you can, you know, make the joke of, oh, this guy's no good, or, oh, you know, like Kohli's not like as horrible pitcher, and this guy's better, and just start bringing stuff up like that. So they get sense that, oh, this person knows what we're talking about. They know they're a bit more, you know, down to our level, and can relate to us better. So I often, you know, and I think she mentioned in our other chat, knowing about iPhones or whatnot, you know, I'll talk about esports, or I'll talk about different things that they know and they understand, because they don't know what a floppy disk is. They don't know what, you know, they didn't grow up in a world that had dial-up internet. And so just being able to relate with them and being able to use questions and examples that relate to them outside of our textbooks that are often written by people. And yes, they might be updated every year, but, you know, if you look at the accounting textbook, one of the main authors is Maureen Gowing, or Sterling, depending on what year you look at. And she's been writing textbooks since the 70s, and she's still writing textbooks, and she's 100 years old. And I'm not using hyperbole here, but things, the examples haven't changed throughout that time. So trying to use those old examples to help, so you have to relate to them and give them actual information and examples that they understand.
And I'd like to extend that to using the technology, if possible, that they connect with. For example, you know, we all use, think of our social media. They don't use our social media, you know, they don't use the same generational social medias and things like that. Dr. Russell Bishop did lots of research with the Maori students in Australia. And one of the things that they found was that also instructors share a little bit about them. So, you know, just tidbit, you know, this weekend I went hiking, or, you know, something like that, that you're sharing a little bit about your personal life, which makes them want to connect with you as well. Any other comments about characteristics of a good instructor?
Just if I can just follow up on what you said, Jana, you know, understanding using their, you know, they use different social medias that we do. So like Facebook is not a thing for a large contingent of all students. Anyone really who's younger than a millennial doesn't use Facebook, or maybe not even Instagram.
No.
But also, you know, especially international students from India did not get exposed to computers, did not get exposed to laptops. They don't understand having to have a second phone line in your home, because you're getting kicked off the internet. So they don't understand it. So you have to be able to understand, how do they use technology? They use it through an iPhone, whatever. So you have to kind of know what they have, so you can make sure that you can deliver the information to them properly.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think that makes a big, huge difference. It totally makes a huge difference. And that's why it is so imperative. Like, I'm jumping right into this. I would never jump right into this. I would spend the whole first class making sure everybody had the right apps working, that everybody had tested it, that everybody sent me a message. You know, the whole first week is just setting routine and getting everybody comfortable with it and making it that safe environment, which brings me to our next one. What are the characteristics of a safe learning community? Group two, what are you going to talk about?
We thought that a safe learning community was a place where students were not afraid to ask questions, and where the instructor admits that sometimes we don't have all the answers. We want the students to feel represented and inclusive. And we want students to feel that they have a voice and that they're comfortable with each other, and that they have someone that, at least one person that they can talk to whenever they want. Flexibility, we don't want to be too rigid in the classroom. And student agency, we want students to be able to make decisions on their own. And if we've used the word comfortable a few times, so we put that in, and we want them to feel safe to be able to make mistakes and try new things without judgment, as well as ideas from various viewpoints should be represented in the classroom.
Thank you. Does anybody have anything from outside of that group that they want to comment on or add to? And Jennifer says, great job, Kathy. Else? I like the idea that you want students to feel represented, but you also want them to feel safe in that environment. With one of the last PDs that we were in at the beginning of the year, they talked about making a group that those students were in, like a study group that those students were in as part of their homework that they met on a, you know, bi-weekly basis or something. And that became a group that you worked with, and it helped build your community because you had groups within your learning community that were supporting each other. And so I found that very interesting, that you were building small groups that built on your big group. Okay, yeah, it's a total complete answer. All right, and what makes a class engaging? Group three.
So we didn't elect someone, but I did the typing, so I'll volunteer. Oh, sorry, I've got some feedback there. Makes the class engaging. Clear expectations. Students know, for instance, when they can ask questions. Is it right when the question comes to them? Can they shoot their hand up and ask the question? How long might they have to hold on to that? They're engaged now. How do we keep them that way? That it's that safe learning environment. It's okay to respectfully disagree, learn how to expand their knowledge, change their minds, learn critical thinking skills. Changing the delivery during our class time, especially for those people who have long classes, 3 hours, you know, speak for a while, lecture for a while, maybe have a video or a group discussion. Make sure that, you know, it's kind of like the medium is changing. Helping the students understand and know why the class is valuable is important to getting them engaged. And most of us talked about injecting humor of some sort, and also being able to laugh at our own selves, for instance, when the technology doesn't work or when things don't go quite as we planned. And then I got kicked out of the room just as someone was chatting and giving it another point. So if you want to add to this list, then go ahead.
Thanks, Jennifer. Anybody else have anything to add? I think let's go back to knowing why class is valuable. I think that this is one that we talk about learning objectives, but we also talk about the know why we learn. So for example, when I was teaching middle school, you know, the students were like, why are we doing this? And we talked about the big ideas, and for the big ideas for every project, the big ideas for the entire year. Of course, I wasn't teaching inquiry-based learning, but the idea was that we put the big ideas. Why are we learning this? So, you know, grade 9 social studies, they need to learn about the civil wars, you know, the American Revolution, the French Revolution, the English Civil War. Why do they need to know that? The big idea wasn't that they needed to remember all these little details. Is that they needed to understand what led to these things, and they needed to understand the social constructs and how those social constructs then have come to what we have today. And so we talked about that. And every time we came up, you know, we had a discussion about something, we were like, and they're like, why are we learning this? We went back to the big ideas and why we're doing the big ideas. And I think we need to make that, I think we need to make that very clear that some of the little stuff is our big idea. Sometimes we, you know, veterinary science, we need to know how to measure the right amount of medicine. Okay. However, sometimes it's the big ideas, you need to know this so you have a better understanding of. Okay. All right. So going on. So thank you, everybody. And I'm going to stop sharing that and switch back to our slideshow presentation. And before I do that, I just also want to point out that I kind of skipped over the agenda part, but I do want to note for everybody that under In our Blackboard, I did put the agenda right there for everybody to see. And I should have spent more time at the beginning of class because it's important for us to remember that students who maybe have a little anxiety, and everybody likes to know what's happening. What am I looking forward to this class? And, you know, Jennifer pointed out you need to switch things up quite a bit. So my goal is never to go over 15 minutes with any. This is my goal. So nobody wants to listen to me talk for 15 minutes. Nobody wants to be doing the same thing for 15 minutes. And so you can see from our agenda, I kind of listed what we were going to do and where we could find things. So we're kind of just finishing off on activity one now. But I would go over in detail with the students kind of, or just pointed out that this is what we're going to do today. We have two breakout rooms. We have three activities, all of those things. So those would be things that I would bump up. So right now we're on the debrief of, you know, activity breakout room number one. Okay. Any comments regarding that? Okay, and we talked about setting up our space, we did our breakout rooms. Okay, so now let's talk about what we've done so far. So one, we allowed our students to check in and tell us how we were feeling. Two, we welcomed everybody. Three, we took attendance and did an agenda. And four, we brought in prior knowledge because those questions I asked you, what makes a good instructor? What makes a good engaging class? And what makes a safe learning community? Those are things you know without studying for anything because you've all been students. So those are four things I've done. What are these things, or can we comment on these things? What am I trying to establish? Guys, thoughts, feelings? And we've made it this far. So if we've made it this far, go give yourself a pat on the back. We've made it this far. Now, if I had people in the room, I'd say, you know, virtual people, give yourself a pat on the back. People beside you, give each other a high five. The reason I'm doing this, oh, people are using chat. routine, expectations, yes. So, and those would be the other part of how to, I see nobody's, the other part is that that does become part of our class routine. And therefore, we're getting into the feel of it. We do it at the beginning of everything. The other part is it's good universal design for learning that you have those things that students are checking in, that they know the agenda, that I'm asking for prior knowledge. Where was I going with this? Get my answer. Okay. So we've done all of those things. So moving on, let's talk about what hybrid. So many different descriptions of hybrid teaching and learning. So many different definitions. A lot of them are, oh, my internet connection is unstable. Imagine that. Are you guys still with me? Somebody? No? Yes, okay. All right. Hybrid teaching and learning. A lot of them, you'll hear them say blended learning, which is kind of, and a lot of definitions are like hybrid learning is when students are sometimes here and sometimes not. Oh, we're kind of calling that kind of a blended learning. For us, hybrid learning is teaching and learning with students right in front of us and students on other campuses and students online. Now, my first introduction to hybrid learning came in the 1990s, and I wasn't even a teacher yet. I was a technician and a TA at a high school, and they had four campuses. being about 3 hours apart, very similar to the situation we have now. And they brought in a Polycom phone with little speakers and a smart board. And they set up the teachers, and so we had a teacher on one campus, we had a teacher in Manning who had students who were going to teach in Manning, Fairview, High Level, Hines Creek, or something like that. And as you can imagine, high school students, luckily, each classroom also had a TA. But that was my first introduction to it. And then I went on to start teaching. I was teaching physics through that. So you had three students on each campus or something like that, so they could get enough students for a full course for chemistry and physics. And the ones that the smaller high schools didn't get enough. And it was very interesting with the limited amount of technology. There wasn't ed tech tools at that time, right? We just had that phone and that smart board. So how do you engage students that way? And how do you connect with them? That was a lot of, hey, can you come up to the bring it start to the computer and do this? So now we have so many more other ways to connect with students. Now the dreaded Polycom. So Jennifer, I will give you a story about that Polycom. So the school that I was in charge of the whole system, but the school in Manning was on a very busy area right near a mill, and the logging trucks, and the Polycom kept picking up the logging truck radios. So we heard some interesting conversations in chemistry from the logging trucks. Yeah. Okay. So this is the one we're sticking with. And you'll hear other definitions that don't sound like ours. Like it sounds like, oh, they're doing a blended learning or they're doing something else, but this is the one we're sticking with. Okay, so let's see if we can get this one working. So challenges and concerns of hybrid teaching. You wanna know why that's not working? I just figured it out. Is because the app is not working on this computer. It's on my laptop. This computer, they didn't install my app. That's why it's not working. So I'm just going to switch over to the other computer while you consider that. So challenges and concerns for hybrid teaching. What are some challenges and concerns? So I just figured this out, why it's not working. So just feel free to put them in chat or just to throw out and talk about them. I'm going to switch computers. What are the challenges and concerns of hybrid teaching? Anybody? Throw them in chat. I'm going to switch this out for a sec.
Technology.
Yes, like the technology right now that I had this all set up nicely. So this would go, the pull everywhere thing would go with us. And it doesn't because the computer in the presentation room doesn't have the app on it. Equitability, but it's really tough. It's hard to remember to repeat everything. Engaging your students who are at a distance. Making sure that the online students can hear the in-classroom students. Meeting students' expectations, ensuring quality experiences. Okay, we have a lot. Anything else? Okay, how to manage the noise levels when you do breakout sessions that are mixed with online. Okay, so Lori, I insist that if I was teaching a hybrid class, that every single student would have headphones with a mic. Because if I do breakout sessions with students here, and also if I have six students here and two online, I'm gonna get those six students here to sit around one computer. Say, you're one computer. So, and the other option is, breakout rooms for online students and breakout rooms for in-class students, but then I'm giving that disparity again, right? All right, factoring in accommodations for students with learning disabilities and making sure no one's left behind. You're right. Yes, I know, Jennifer. I need to bring it up so that I can see what everybody's chatting. I only have one screen. Okay. All right. Okay. So we have lots of challenges. Okay, so what we're going to do right now is we're going to look at some best practices and tips. We're going to look at some plans, and we're going to share our own solutions. Because as instructors and people who are right now in the midst of this, we can come up with our own solutions based on what we have. And we can also ask for things. Like, I think I'm really going to ask IT for 2 monitors for every setup. Okay. First thing I wanted to do is talk about hybrid versus traditional learning overview. And this is from the University of Cornell. However, I'd like to point out that what they have is traditional learning and hybrid learning. I consider traditional learning and new learning, because many of the hybrid learning factors or UDL factors was to be something that I would put in every classroom. It is not limited to traditional, right? I tend to not be an authority in my classroom. I tend to be a facilitator. It's just not in a hybrid classroom. I tend to do guided student learning and not do high stakes grading. So I would say traditional learning versus, 21st century teaching and learning in these sections. So the instructor role has changed from authority to a facilitator. We do more guiding than we do more high stakes, has to be high stakes. You're going to fail if this isn't done. We provide frequent feedback with more small assessments. Those are all good qualities of a 21st century classroom. The student role. Used to be, you attend your class, you do your homework, you take your tests, and you depend on the instructor to cover the material. Okay, now I'm asking students to work together to do the learning. I'm not necessarily the authority at the front of the room giving out the information. Okay, the learning environment is flexible. Right? And it could be anything. It could be partially online, partially face-to-face, all online, whatever. I see I have 2. And also the learning environment, the LMS, right? We have everything posted online. And then the approach, traditionally a teacher-centered, and a 21st century learning would be a learning-centered, active and collaborative. And in class time, traditionally, you would listen to the instructor for a long, long time. Like, I remember university courses, those 2-3 hour courses that we still do, okay? Long, long time. Okay, in a 21st century learning class, I want to get people up and moving. And that's really hard in a hybrid situation because they're tied to their computers. But we want to make sure that we are actually changing things up and engaging people. Okay, and out of class time, lots of things, group assignments, studies and quizzes. But now we can do a whole bunch of other things too, like watch videos and stuff like that. I do a lot of group work in class too, because I giving them time, I can see how they're going, I can give them input, and especially if I want to get the groups established first and then say, okay, now outside of class time meet. But if I can meet with them in class for a little bit and get their groups going for even half an hour, usually more successful. Any comments on hybrid versus traditional versus hybrid? My comments on, I don't think hybrid is necessarily the column for the label for this column. I think it's 21st century learning and teaching, or UDL or something like that. I just grabbed this from Cornell. So easy. Comments, thoughts, feelings, suggestions. No comments? All right, so I should see everybody give us a thumbs up if they're okay to go on. But if you're, I'm not sure if I know what is happening, or a down if you're not good. On your screen, thumbs up, flat, down. Oh, Jamie Burns has a thumbs up. Okay, all right, moving on. Okay, so now let's talk about the benefits of hybrid learning. Once again, Poll Everywhere should work. However, we don't have the app installed on this computer for Chrome. Okay, all right, anything else? So the benefits of hybrid learning. What would be the benefits for hybrid learning? I'm just gonna throw this out here. Benefits for hybrid learning.
I just wanted to say that I'm unable to post anything in the chat. It's disabled.
Oh, yeah, rude. Mine as well.
Yes, yeah, same here. I thought that was on purpose.
I was just going to say, I was trying to not take it personally.
No, it's not personal. I don't know why it's disabled. I will go take a look at it. There are people posting in the chat. So I am assuming that... I see why Jennifer was complaining about the breakout room number one, which I don't see. It's because the lead thing has taken over. Have you guys not seen anything for a while now?
Correct.
Yeah.
Oh, you guys should have. I misunderstood her because my screen looks great. It's because the lead Zoom room is frozen. How rude. Okay, that's what happens when you use two computers.
We can see your desktop now, Jana.
Yes.
And it looks just like mine, very busy.
Better?
Yay, benefits of hybrid learning. Looks awesome.
Yes, I'm backing up though, because this is the chart I was talking about. You should have been more clear, Jennifer, because I was, sorry about that. I obviously didn't read it carefully enough, and okay. I wasn't looking at my other screen. So now I know what you're talking about. Thank you. So yeah, this was the chart I was talking about from the University of Cornell. Yeah, that, you know, the difference between their traditional learning list and their hybrid list. And look, now the lead computer that I have everything else on is following along too. And the traditional learning. So going on to that, how do you feel about what they have to say, what the difference between traditional learning and hybrid learning is? So my apologies, guys, somebody should have spoke up and said, hey, and I think that's why you weren't able to chat. Some of you may not be able to chat if you didn't come in using your Northern account. But you should all be able to chat. Yeah,
but I could chat a few minutes ago, and now it's still saying disabled.
Yeah, I have no idea why, but I'll work on it. No problem. I want all of you to chat. I want all of you to chat. Okay, give it a try. So, but I like to hear your voices too. So we're good. Anything else? So any comments on the traditional and difference between hybrid? As I said, I believe it shouldn't necessarily be hybrid. It should be 21st century learning and teaching or something like that.
I feel it's a more engaging model where the student is actually participating and probably makes it more effective where they return the information or they retain the information because they've been active participants. And therefore, I do feel like we're progressing in education.
Yeah. Yeah, I totally, thank you. I like that comment. Anybody else? Okay.
I was just going to say, I think benefit of hybrid learning, we probably talked about this in here somewhere, but one of the biggest benefits for me is just that accessibility for people who wouldn't be able to be successful in an in-person classroom, then the option to be online, and especially, I mean, coming out of COVID, the ability for some students to just be able to be in and out of online has increased their ability to be successful.
Yeah, absolutely. Any other benefit? I know for instructors, it's really hard to be a hybrid teacher. What are the benefits of an instructor? There's lots of benefits for learners. There's the flexibility, there's a whole bunch of things, but what are the benefits to instructors? Anybody?
I'm thinking go ahead.
Oh, that's okay. Just a quick comment. I was just going to share that we learn a lot more from our students while they're doing their work and sharing than we would just going up and, you know, running through slides and presenting material.
Yeah. And I think that's anytime you move away from a traditional model, whether it be into a hybrid model or into a more 21st century UDL model, is that we are learning too. And we're not just dispensing knowledge. Anybody else?
It probably cuts down a lot of our prep time as well in some ways. If our students are learning right along without the traditional model of like PowerPoint presentations and those sorts of things.
Yeah, prep time is just totally different now, right? And so we're going to talk about that and what prep time would look like. So I'm just going to talk to you about some best practices for hybrid learning. So the Global Academic Academy, Global Online Academic Academy, has shared these 16 hybrid tips for teachers that I thought were very useful. So move your headquarters online. So as I pointed out, I used my entire everything we were going to do today, think about all those links I gave you are more or less handouts, right? Normally I'd have you go into your groups and fill a poster board or go into your groups and move around the room as in a move around the room as kind of centers. I've taken all of that and I put it online on my Blackboard. Okay. In my asynchronous backup plan was, well, you could go into every single thing in Blackboard and fill it out and try to move along with each other. Arrange devices so students can see and hear. And so we tried to do that. So connect in-person and remote students. So we did a good job of that today. Use your chat tools for real-time collaboration. Well, we're trying to do that. Set up your classroom for connections and make thinking structured and visible. So when I ask you to brainstorm, we pull it out and we put everything on it. Make clear, intentional plans and share them. So I shared our agenda with us. And so we can see what the plans are. And if I was getting really fancy, I'd actually put the learning objective in there and everything like that, that this is what we're going to do today. Okay, and make time for remote students. So, you know, we have our lecture time, but use your office time to make sure that your Zoom room's open and they're right there for you. Okay, and slow down and forgive yourself. You guys have to forgive me as well because Jennifer said we can only see this. And I was like, no, it's working here on my screen. Well, it really wasn't because you guys are still stuck over on the lead screen. And so, you know, forgive yourself, but also forgive others. Okay. Now, let me make sure when I share that I'm going to share sound.
Hey, everybody, it's Sam Carey from the New Ed Tech Classroom.
Hey, can we all hear that before I continue playing?
Yep.
All right.
If you're new to my channel, I make videos that bring together high-impact instructional strategies and powerful technology tools to transform your teaching. In this video, I'll be giving you 5 tips for how to address the challenge of concurrent hybrid teaching, where you teach in-person students and virtual learners at the same exact time. First of all, I just want to acknowledge the challenges of concurrent hybrid teaching. It's an unconventional teaching method that requires unconventional instructional strategies. So let me give you 5 tips that will hopefully help you out. Here's my first tip. Rather than attempting to bring your physical classroom to your virtual learners, move your entire class online. Although clearly well-intentioned, trying to deliver the physical classroom to students via live streaming or mounting multiple cameras around the room so they can see you lecture and teach at the whiteboard is always going to pale in comparison to the real thing. It's sort of like virtual field trips. They aren't bad, but wouldn't you always rather be on an actual field trip? Focusing on bringing the entire class online will also help you shift away from emphasizing student observation to emphasizing student participation. Live streaming a classroom puts a priority on students being able to see what's happening in class, but doesn't inherently encourage them to engage with the learning activities in that class. Bringing your entire class online will also mean focusing on optimizing your digital classroom space rather than focusing on optimizing your physical classroom space. For example, focus time and energy on setting up a well-organized digital hub where students and families can find all the information they need through your learning management system. Better yet, get your entire school to come together and decide on a uniform system for organizing everyone's learning management system to create a more predictable experience for students and families. So instead of bringing the physical classroom to your remote learners, level the playing field, leverage technology to your advantage, and move your entire class online. My second tip is to keep using all the asynchronous teaching techniques you've learned. Remote teaching forced millions of teachers to build skills in how to provide instruction to students, even if they aren't in front of you learning all at once, all at the same time. Teachers learn how to create asynchronous video tutorials with Screencastify, Loom, or Screencast-O-Matic. Teachers have learned how to assign student-paced lessons in Pear Deck and Nearpod, and how to design HyperDocs and choice boards to create rigorous lesson sequences that students can complete entirely on their own. If you have all students moving through a lesson in sequential order at the same pace, any number of disruptions can derail your lesson. If a virtual student logs in late and misses your direct instruction, it's going to be difficult for them to jump into the middle of a lesson. If a couple of virtual students are having difficulty with logging into class, you'll be faced with a choice to stop and troubleshoot while everyone else waits or move on without them and risk leaving them behind. A hybrid classroom calls for hybrid instruction. Trying to run a hybrid class as an entirely synchronous class is extremely difficult to pull off. Although you'll still likely need to do some synchronous instruction, you should also continue to provide a large majority of instruction asynchronously. That brings me to my third tip, which is to set up your hybrid classroom in stations. Stations are inherently asynchronous because you can't be at every station at once. Having the large majority of your students working on independent, self-paced activities will open up your time and space to work with students in smaller groups. That's going to reduce the impact of the unique challenges of teaching in person and virtual learners at the same time. Although the learning that takes place in stations needs to be connected, the key idea is that the order through which students move through stations doesn't matter. Breaking your lessons into non-sequential pieces is called horizontal planning. And if you want to learn all about how it works, I suggest you check out one of Catlin Tucker's books on blended learning. When you use stations, I'd still recommend starting class altogether to calibrate on what you're learning. For example, if you are teaching a lesson about fractions, you might start with a whole group activity where students solve fraction problems in Padlet. Then students would move into their stations. In one station, students might be working on a personalized learning platform like iXL or ST Math. In another, they could be learning about fractions through a self-paced Nearpod lesson. In another, playing a math game like Prodigy. And then in the final station, they could be getting direct instruction from you on a skill. I say move in scare quotes because students don't have to physically move in order for you to implement stations. If students can't be in small groups because of social distancing, you can split up the room into quadrants, number each part of the room, and have students rotate to the next activity after a given period of time. Once students move through all the stations over the course of a day or maybe even a week, you could have them start to work on an independent project where they're applying learning by doing something like creating a digital book. By the way, if you like the tips I'm sharing in this video, be sure to hit the like button and be sure to let me know in the comments below how you're currently addressing the challenge of concurrent hybrid teaching. My fourth tip is to leverage the power of digital workspace programs in your hybrid classroom. Digital workspace programs allow you to teach via a multimedia enhanced digital whiteboard and allow students to work in their own digital workspace. And most importantly, they allow you to see what all students are working on in real time, let you jump into a student's workspace to give them feedback, and allow for peer collaboration in the workspace. One of the best digital workspace programs is ClassKick. Similar to a program like Nearpod, ClassKick allows you to build dynamic interactive lessons for your students, as well as see their responses in real time. With ClassKick, however, you're able to see all students working on their assignments in a single grid view. And in the actual workspace, students can choose from a wide variety of ways to interact with the work you've assigned. For example, they can choose to draw, record audio, type, drag and drop, take pictures, etc. It's not just students who can use all these tools. As the teacher, you can also choose from any of the response tools as a way to give students feedback. And there's also a comment bank with pre-created comments and customizable ones, so you can start automating the process of giving immediate feedback without losing that feeling of personalization. If a student needs help while they are working, they can raise, but I know a ton of you do anyway. So if you or your school are thinking of investing in upgrades or adjustments to make your classroom more hybrid learning friendly, use that money to buy access to high quality instructional technology programs instead of spending it on equipment. The only exception is that if students don't have one-to-one computers, you should spend money on getting them all devices first. Avoid spending money on camera equipment, lapel mics, or any other piece of equipment that you wouldn't use in any other situation than concurrent hybrid teaching. Those types of investments won't do much to facilitate students' learning and are focused on student observation rather than student participation. Although there are lots of great 100% free programs such as Whiteboard Chat, Canva for Education, Flipgrid, Google Jamboard, Adobe SparkPost, and Loom for educators, many other powerful programs such as Nearpod, Pear Deck, Actively Learn, Padlet, Newzella, ClassKick, GimKit, and Breakout EDU cost money to access the premium versions. And I think that's okay. They're making a high quality product and need to make a living. Using any of those programs will immediately increase active participation in class and are all tools you can and should continue to use regardless of your exact teaching situation. Another option would be to invest in an online course about teaching with technology or in PD on hybrid teaching techniques. You likely aren't going to be teaching in a concurrent hybrid model forever. So if you're going to make a financial investment, make sure you're investing in becoming a more adept user of instructional technology and build skills or get access to programs that will benefit you and your students in the long run. If you want more tips and tricks about implementing hybrid or blended. Hey everybody, it's Sam Carey from the New EdTech Classroom.
All right, comments on the video. There's some things that he said in there that I agreed with. There's some things I didn't agree with. What are your thoughts? Jennifer thought it was a great video. I thought there was too many sales pitches in there. I also, you know, he was like, you're not going to be in a hybrid situation forever. That might not be true for us. So just throwing that out there. Yeah. So what are some other thoughts that you had? Anybody?
Christine has a hand up.
Oh, Christine.
Hi, it's Christiane. I just wanted to make a couple of remarks on, yes, I agreed with you, Jenna. There is a lot of sales pitches. And I just really want to know how to use the one platform that I'm using currently, which is Zoom. And I want to know how to use it well. So I think for me, that was a lot of information. And I just would like to focus on narrowing the scope.
Yeah. I absolutely agree. First of all, we have a lot of technology available to us right now, and Zoom is very, very powerful. We're not really, you know, we're using like Pool Everywhere and Socrative and stuff, but Zoom Pools can do a lot of that for us. You never have to leave anything else. You never have to leave that area, right? So that was something that Angela and I were talking about the other day. Let's start doing some more training on Zoom and how to use Zoom Pools and how to get that Zoom pull data as quizzes out and bring it into your Blackboard and stuff like that. So that's something we're certainly going to be moving ahead with.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah. And like even today, I made this really nice presentation and I used Pull Everywhere and I work on my laptop. I brought it over here. I put it on this presentation and the app isn't attached to it and I can't, it doesn't work. And I'm like, oh, right. So we just need to make sure that stuff we have available to us is working on the technology we have available to us. Any other comments?
That's the answer, Jennifer.
So again, he spoke as fast as I do. So it was trying to take everything in. Two comments. One is lots of times it's beyond our control about the delivery. So he said, well, just move everybody online. It's a very simplistic answer to a more complicated problem. And my hybrid is actually not some in class and some online. It's some in class in Haileybury and some in class in Kirkland. Mm-hmm. And so that's point two is like the Kirkland students, they can't use chat. Like you have to engage them differently and you have to use different strategies. And I don't have the answers for that. So,
okay. So yeah. Jennifer, I'm going to write that down because I want to talk to you about why they can't use chat, but anybody else comment before that?
Natalie?
Yeah, so maybe just kind of a similar question, I think. So here's an example. Like, let's say I teach a Comm 1 class and I have one class or one section that is taught to people who are online and people who are at different campuses, and I'm here in Timmins. So it's all done. Right now I'm using Collaborate. I haven't moved over to Zoom yet, but it's taught online, I guess. And then I have another class, same thing, but different section, and everybody's in person or supposed to be here in a classroom on the Timmins campus. So I'm just wondering, like, what do others do? Do they just do the same thing using the same technology and the same online applications and all that? Or do they do things differently with those students in class? Does that question make any sense at all?
It does. Okay. Does anybody want to comment on it? I have some comments on it, but does anybody else want to comment on that? So I think, and you can say, well, she's nuts, whatever you want to say, right? You're the teacher, you're in charge, you need to do what works for you. That's kind of it, right? For me, if I had students who were in front of me and I didn't, and I had the same class with students who were not in front of me, I would treat them somewhat differently. The students in front of me, I would do workstations, I would get them up and moving and stuff like that. So, you know, have reading sections or have, you know, you're doing communications, and then I think we have to do some workbook stuff and some, you know, do some drafts. And they have to, I would have them critique each other's drafts. Well, I would have them do that in small groups of two or three, and I'd have them move about in the room. When it comes to the hybrid students, I would pair them with one online, one in the room, however it works, so that my community is building differently. And so that I'm getting a community that's moving about the room here and keeping them moving. And on that, and the hybrid one, I'm getting them to connect with each other online and in person so that they're building that community, if that makes any sense. I would treat them somewhat differently. Knowing what I would do in the classroom, I would try to do online in a different way. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Okay. Like if you're using like Socrative or Poll Everywhere or any of the other numbers, would you use them in both class?
Sometimes I would, sometimes I wouldn't. It depends on the question, right? So if I'm using Socrative to just check for, you know, just give them a quick quiz to see how they're doing or something. But if I'm doing a poll where I just want to know if they have it or they don't, or I would rather do thumbs up, thumbs down, or I don't know, or get them moving, right? So it depends on the question. If that would be my main answer to that. If it's something that I want to get some feedback from that I can go back and look at later, yeah, I would do a poll everywhere at Socrative. If it's something that is a simple question and I can just say, you know, hands up or, you know, things like that, then I would do it, because it's good to get you physically moving. And it's good to get your students physically moving. It's a long time to sit, and you know, the brain research on education says that students need to actually move at least some part of their body every 10 to 15 minutes. And that includes like telling them to give themselves a pat on the back or give a high five to a neighbor or do a thumbs up or any of those things. So the more you can move, the better.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, any other comments? Go back to Jennifer's chat situation. So Jennifer, they can't chat because you're not getting them into Zoom. Is that the reason?
Correct. So it's being done by the auto satellite. The Kirkland students are in one classroom and then we're in C122 in Haileybury.
But you're still using Zoom?
No.
Okay.
That's my question is, you and I can talk offline. Yes. I'm quite happy to do that. But those are the kinds of challenges that we're talking about, is especially for new instructors, knowing what we have the ability to make decisions about.
Well, you can use any technology that's available to you. You're the instructor.
Well, let's hope that that's true.
Well, we will help you out.
Okay. Thanks. I'll email you, Jenna.
Okay. Any other questions, comments, thoughts? Okay, so when I think of online learning, or I think of any learning, and I think of 21st century learning, I always think of UDL. And UDL talks about being inclusive and making sure that students have support and structure and strategies and teaching those strategies. Some of our students don't have the strategies to do something specific. So we have to teach the strategy for them to complete the assignment successfully. And encourage collaboration and build a community. And ongoing formative feedback, not summative feedback, so that you know where they are and know what needs to be covered. And we need to engage all learners and make all course material and learning experience accessible. So we obviously don't have time. Coyote told me I would not have time when I shared this presentation with him. So one thing I do often in my classes is Jigsaw. And I know that a majority of my students, and in my flipped classes, I always have them do all the readings and all the videos at home. And we do the discussions and the activities around that in the physical building. And I might even do that in my hybrid classes. But sometimes there's so much reading and I know they're not going to read it all, I'll do a jigsaw. And what a jigsaw is you put them in groups with a reading. Okay. And so, for example, I chose three readings. And we're just going to take a peek at them. Nothing crazy. I chose three readings. And you are going to, and what they would do is in their group. So once you hit your group, you say, okay, person one, read this paragraph. Person two, read this paragraph. Person three, read this paragraph. And they create a quick document together, or they summarize it together and then present. And so what that's called is a jigsaw, because that group is taking a document or something and putting it together, or just pulling it apart and putting it together, summarizing it, and then they present. And if I was teaching it physically, sometimes I would even take the article and I'd rip it into pieces, like paragraph one, paragraph two, paragraph three. So article one is on yellow paper, find your yellow paper, people, and put your presentation together. And I just hand them out all these pieces of different colored paper and they'd have to put together the article and figure out how it went. So once again, it's an easy way to do a breakout room in a physical area, or, you know, in a hybrid, in a, if you're face to face with them, here's your article, here's your pieces, figure it out and summarize it and be able to come back. So that's a jigsaw. It's done in, you know, physically and online, in the hot online area. I'm saying these are your three articles. I'm putting you in a breakout room, summarize and get back to us. And once you're in your breakout room, figure out how you're going to do it. So what I would do is, how much time do we have? Kylie, where am I on the schedule? Go back to our schedule here. Oh, we have a little bit of time, don't we? Oh, not that much time. Okay. So breakout rooms number two, I would put you in breakout rooms, you read the articles, and the articles are very interesting because they have a different, what I'm going to do is because they have different ideas. And so I am going to put you in there for like 5 minutes, maybe 10 minutes, and then pull you back, okay? So we are going to go to breakout rooms, and you'll see in our schedule on Blackboard, you'll see in our schedule on Blackboard, and I'll share it with you once you're in there, that we have, once again, our students would all have access to our Blackboard and it'll be nice and organized, that I have the ABCD. So 1, 2, 3, these are your areas, and you guys can't see anything because it's not updating, is it? Tell me these things. Bad at telling me these things. So in Blackboard, you'll see our breakout rooms for our jigsaw reading. Okay. Okay, so we're going to put you in our breakout rooms for a quick second. And you're obviously not going to be able to get much of it. Just skim it, break it up quickly, skim it, and get back to us on what you learned. And these are, this is where we're going to get a whole bunch of ideas for breakout room, or sorry, for okay. Catherine, can I send you to breakout room 3? Oh, there goes that recording again. All right. Let's talk about use of tech. My best advice to you is use the tech, leverage the tech that you have available to you, and don't go, get overwhelmed with all the tech. Choose the pieces that work best for you and don't try to do all of it. We have Blackboard. It's where our students need to go anyways. Leverage it. Use it as your backbone for your entire course. That means having student linking for students where they need to grab things, even on the fly, like we did today. Zoom has whiteboards, it has chats, it has polls. You could be able to use all of that. For example, we use Poll Everywhere and Socrata for quizzing and polling, but we have that built into Zoom. And so, you know, as a college, you know, we're piloting Poll Everywhere and Socrata, but we, you know, maybe those are things we need to look at, how Zoom is comparable to them. Oh, they're sending you out. Bye, Coyote. Okay, it is almost 2:30. I'm just going to, I don't know who's with Coyote. I don't know who, and look at some collaboration tools that you don't, but stick with the technology you know, and don't be afraid to ask us. That's what LEAD's here for. We like being asked questions. Build your learning community. Okay, create small group projects, use your cloud-based apps and tools, make in-class activities digital. So any in-class activity you would do, try to figure out how to make it digital. Play games for learning, but also play games for fun. And I knew we were gonna run out of time, actually get us to play bingo with all the vocabulary we learned today. And you could go get your online bingo card. And Cody was ready to call the bingo word. Okay. And I was going to get us to do a scavenger hunt where we fill out together our engagement resources. So before you go, I would just ask for, I will be sending you some feedback. Before you leave, oh, Mary Jose's hands up again. Yeah. Which is awesome. And we like hands up.
My hand was still up from the last time. Okay. I'm not sure to remove the icon, but you can use it as a high five for now.
Thank you. Yeah. All right. So obviously we still have need for hybrid lessons. I will be sending you out the email for feedback and what you need from us. And we will concentrate on building PD based on what you need from us. And let us know what you think you need to make your hybrid courses more successful as well. Any other comments? Thanks, Coyote. All right, Coyote's being kicked out of his room, so we have to go.
Thanks, Jana.
Sorry.
Oh, no, no problem. Thanks, everybody. Thank you.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
Okay, bye.